Thank you all for being here. And let's see what we bring forth today together. I'd like to begin with a golf story. Probably not what you were expecting. Like you, I do a number of things to try to keep my mind and body healthy. Do crosswords and quizzes and different mental activities. Ride my bike, go swimming, do some weight exercises, and also play golf at times. I find the golf is useful not only for the exercise and the strategy involved, but it is an opportunity for me to be with other men. I usually play with a group of 8 to 10 men, and everyone chips in a dollar to make it a little bit competitive. See who has the best round. And I've watched a lot of YouTubes on how to swing a golf club and read books and go up to the driving range on occasion or practice and try to remember the things that I'm told about shifting my weight and what my knees are supposed to do and my wrists and hands and all the rest. And as you might imagine, when you have 20 different thoughts going on in your head and you're trying to make a golf swing, results can be pretty erratic, which is often what the case is. Golf is a deceptively difficult game to play well. You'd think it wouldn't be that hard. I mean, after all, the ball isn't coming at you at a high rate of speed like a baseball or tennis. It's just sitting there on the ground waiting to be struck. But as my friend John Gray found out when he came to visit one time, and I gave him a pitching wedge to hit a few balls, when he did make contact, the ball went anywhere but straight. It was funny to the point of being absurd. We both started to laugh at the silliness of it. Which is a point in itself, because the spirit of life is one of ease and enjoyment and humor. I sometimes am amazed when I turn on the TV and see supposedly spiritual leaders, usually Christian or Muslim, exhorting their masses of followers to behave a certain way, believe certain things, pray certain ways. Often their expressions are dour, stern, angry, sometimes smug. And it strikes me each time that this has very little to do with the current of life to be brought to focus, which is one of ease and enjoyment. Even when we're facing challenges, physically and financially, relationship-wise, and so on, there's humor in everything if one is where one should be. Life is to be enjoyed. So this one day, I went up to the driving range to practice, and I picked a slot. To my left is this young fella who is a phenomenal golfer. I've watched him over the years, and he'll hit a ball that will just go up into the stratosphere. I wonder if it ever comes down, but I assume it must at some point, many hundreds of yards from there. When he was in high school, He was the state boys golf champion. And then he went on to a high caliber program in Oklahoma where he played golf. So I started chatting with him, and he's a very fine young man, very open and warm, and certain quality of character that I admire. I asked him what he was doing, and he said he just graduated college and turned pro. He entered a small tournament and he won. And now he's trying to get his PGA tour card and going through different rounds of qualifying, which is why he was at the range practicing. We had this nice interchange and I wished him well and then went to go ahead and practice. He was behind me, so I wasn't watching him hit balls, but I could hear the sound when he hit a golf ball and it makes a particular crack, which is very unlike the thump that it makes when I hit a golf ball. In any case, that day, something very strange happened. All of these thoughts about what I'm supposed to do with my different body parts during the golf swing evaporated. The golf swing seemed easy and obvious. And I thought, why am I making it so complicated? It's really pretty simple. So I needed to test it out. I picked out a wedge, hit a ball that way, and it went straight with a nice arc, beautiful. And I went up through all of my clubs, all the way up to the driver. Same thing. I just hit the ball great. It was easy. Wondered what all the fuss was about. And then in the weeks afterward, before it got cold here, I went out with the men and played a few times. And there was a tendency to want to go back and think about all the things I'm supposed to be doing. But I put that out of my mind and just went with this simple swing and played much better than I usually play. And won all the money each time. And the guys were saying they weren't going to let me play with them anymore because they'd become too good. So there's a story that I've just told. There is a point to it, which I will get to shortly. But let me back up a little bit and say that stories are very useful ways to understand something greater. Books are very popular, movies, TV shows, but most of them these days are about the coarseness of the human state. Almost every show I watch has somebody dying, murder mysteries or some revenge killing. And a lot of the computer games that kids play these days don't seem to put value on human life. People are being mowed down all the time. I'm not too interested in that sort of thing anymore. The violence, the coarseness, the jealousy, the enmity, all the machinations of the human state. There are also some stories where there are people of character who face obstacles and persevere and come through to the end to achieve something of value. A lot of times these are called feel-good stories. And I guess everything else are feel-bad stories, which is pretty much the way I feel when I watch most of them. But stories are useful to convey something larger. In this particular case, with the golfing story, I realized that the reason I was suddenly playing so much better that day was not because I had suddenly developed some great athletic ability that had heretofore been hidden, or that with my mind I had cleverly figured out what I should be doing with the golf swing. I realized that what was taking place was that I was within the substance of this elite golfer who happened to be nearby. And it was this borrowed substance that let me see things differently. Perhaps you've had the experience of being around someone who was a master at music or woodworking or art, and just felt in their presence that you saw something different. Now, this is interesting because we are radiant beings. And part of that radiance is that extending from us is an envelope of concentrated substance. An example of this could be the sun, which is a radiant body. It's so intense in the middle that you can't look at it straight on. But around the sun is a corona where it's not quite as intense. And then from there, radiation moves out in all directions in a more diffuse pattern. It's the same with all of us. There is this nimbus, this aura that extends from us in a more intense fashion, and then radiation that moves out beyond ourselves in various ways. Now, this radiation may relate to a specific subject like golf or music or how we live, who we are, what the purpose of us being on this planet is all about. Now, we can relate this, for example, to our time with a great spiritual light like Martin Exeter, who many of us had the privilege to know. And in his presence, particularly during a talk, and no doubt amplified by all those in agreement with him, there was a lifting up as we were invited to share in his substance, to begin to see things from a higher vantage point than was the case otherwise. And it wasn't so much the words he used, although he was very specific and accurate with his wording. But it was the invitation to rise up into this shared substance that let us see something new, each in our own way. There are many times where I attended a talk of his and came away from it thinking of behaviors or ways that I were thinking, which just no longer fit from the vantage point that I was seeing at that point. But in going back to read over what was being said, it had nothing to do with what I experienced. But what had happened was, in that case, I, and perhaps you too, were being uplifted into a level of understanding that was greater than we had on our own. This to me is very important because it's how the world is going to change. We may think that we've come to bring about a new earth, to let there be a spiritual change so that the body of mankind is regenerated, and that we are going to convince people by all of our words how eloquent we are in speaking or writing. And well, there's a place for all of that. But what's really needed is for there to be fine spiritual substance so that people are uplifted and begin to see for themselves. Oh, I would say that there were a lot of people who attended Martin's talks who felt uplifted and felt something from his effulgence and his presence and came back week after week feeling this upliftment, but never actualizing it in their own experience. And therefore, when that was taken away, they no longer had that understanding, and it was left to their own interpretation as to what it was they experienced. And I see a number of people who look back on their days with that particular kind of spiritual education and don't see it for what it was. Some people even think they were in a cult. But now they're free of that cult because they had never taken responsibility to sustain that substance for themselves. Oh, I understood that with my little golfing adventure. I could have fallen back into my old pattern and started thinking about all the 30 different things I'm supposed to do, and everything would have been lost. But somehow I realized that wasn't the way to go, but to sustain the new understanding that I had. And lo and behold, I became a different golfer. Not that that matters a whole lot to anybody, but it taught me something. When the master was on earth, there were those who were in his presence who felt his substance and his level of understanding and were attracted to it, but they tended to want to fit it into their own preconceived ideas of their religious upbringing or their political views on Israel and Rome and fit it into what they thought he was saying without really hearing what he was saying. And very few of them actually took the responsibility to sustain what it was that they were hearing and experiencing. At one point, the disciple said to him, "Tell us, Master, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And he put a little child in their midst and said, "This is who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Now, the child wasn't filled with all of these mental structures. Children know they have a lot to learn. They're very open to learn. There is a kind of childish innocence, if you will. And that is what is required to fully appreciate what is being offered from a higher level. Now, I would say there is such a thing as mature innocence, which is coming to the point of letting go of all the wonderful things we think we know, how smart we are, how much understanding we think we have, and being like that child, unstructured and innocent, willing to learn, and in a sense, letting the outer human part of us yield to the inner divine part of ourselves, to the angel within, if you wish to use that kind of a word, to be able to say, "Well, I do know a few things about how things work in this world, but I don't have the understanding of this inner reality of which I am a part." And to be willing to yield to that, to be willing to accept this inner guidance. And when one does, when there is perception as to the direction of the flow of life through you in that moment, it never fails. Love never faileth. It always leads us in the right direction to put us in the best place for success and for spiritual achievement. Sometimes the journey toward spiritual understanding is spoken of as a mountain. In the beginning, we're at a pretty low altitude, don't see very much. But as we rise up in consciousness, as we ascend in understanding, we begin to see more. Who shall ascend unto the hill of the Lord? One of the things I saw early on was that with increased vision comes increased responsibility. And what I always heard from those who knew more than I did at the time was, don't believe what I'm saying, prove it out for yourselves. And maybe that's one of the di big differences between a cult and true spiritual education. In a cult, people are told to give up their personal responsibility, to accept what their leader tells them to do, to give up their own empowerment. And on that basis, people believe all sorts of things, even drink poison Kool-Aid when it comes to it. But true spiritual mentors say, you are responsible for your world. Here's what I know works for me. Prove it out for yourself. See if it works. And there are experiments where we can do this. For example, we were told in Spiritual 101, be thankful for all things. Well, that sounds good, but a lot of us would say, well, wait a minute. There are a lot of things in my world that I really don't want to be thankful for. A lot of people who don't deserve my thanks. But you can experiment with it. You can spend a day being unthankful, being critical of everything in your world, complaining about people, criticizing their work, your coworkers, your family. See how it makes you feel. See how people react to you. Then you could spend another day being thankful for everything, accepting what comes your way, offering encouragement to your family and to your coworkers. See what happens. And you'll find on the basis of that experiment that, hey, being thankful really works. It makes my day much smoother. I feel better about myself. People feel better about me. Maybe there's something to this. Or we could say another spiritual 101 thing. We were told you need to be in the present moment. That's where life is. It doesn't exist anywhere else. A person can say, okay, I'm going to try that. And spend a day thinking about all the things in the past, all the things that you think were mistakes, that you have regrets about, that you wish you had done differently. And you can think about the future and all the things there are to worry about, the climate and who won the presidential election and all of these things that probably could go wrong. See what kind of day you have. Probably will be pretty miserable. Then you could have a day where you do the best you can to not think about what happened in the past, not think about all the things that could go wrong, but probably never will anyway, and focus on what's at hand. And you'll find that things work out much better that way. When the master was on earth, he tried telling people that. He said, the kingdom of heaven, the reality of life is now. It's at hand. When something is at hand, it's right here. And yet, the people who came after him said, oh, wait a minute, that's not really what he meant. What he meant was, no, this life isn't all that important, but it's after I die, sometime in the future, that my reward will come. And that's permeated the Muslim world and many other philosophies and religions as well. People did not hear what was being said, did not take responsibility to see how it applied in their own lives, and retranslated it, reinterpreted it, and came out with something completely different that they think is what was being said, which wasn't being said at all. It's thought that the goal of our human lives is to ascend in consciousness and come to that place that metaphorically is the top of the mountain, the place where there's a 360-degree view, the crossover point between heaven and earth. And that if I can only get there, if I can completely yield to the inner reality that I know that I am, then I will have really accomplished something. Well, yes, you will, because not too many people make it that far. But if one does reach that point, one discovers that this isn't an end point, but the beginning of something. It's like going through an educational process and getting a diploma and then saying, well, I've got my diploma. I can sit in my room and look at my diploma now. No, it means you've attained a certain level where you can begin to apply what you've learned. And so even when one is fully present on earth as a divine being, there's more. There is a golden upward spiral without end, so that there is always more to see, always more to experience as a divine being. The universe is a very big place with many layers, and individually, one can ascend in wisdom and experience and understanding. And with greater vision comes greater responsibility, so that you are more capable of doing what's needed in the unfoldment of the universe. The same thing is true of the body of humankind. Even in the divine state, as it perhaps was present once upon a time, and maybe once again, just being present isn't enough. There's something to do. Now, I mentioned stories. Stories don't stop just because the fallen human state stops. We have gifts like music and art and dance and acting and other gifts that are very useful to tell stories. And even when the body of humankind is fully conscious of its purpose, there are stories to be told that bring to focus different vibratory factors, much like sections of a choir might have part of a melody to sing, while another section of a choir sings part of a melody. And it's the combination of the different sections, the altos and the tenors, for example, who have something to do together while another section is quiet. And then another combination comes in so that the whole effect is something glorious and intricate. There is a melody that's sounding in the cosmos, a song celestial. And humanity has a particular part of that melody to contribute. But we don't need to go there today because the body of humanity isn't consciously present on Earth. All the parts are there, we just have forgotten who we are. So the first order of business is letting the spirit of truth bring all things to remembrance. And this happens as there is the substance of understanding present so that others may see. The part that each of us has to play is that as we come up the side of this metaphorical mountain and let our hearts be purified and our subconscious be remade and our mind be the light of truth, then what moves through us in our living shows greater clarity and impact. Finer substance is produced, which goes beyond ourselves and our immediate worlds and has the potential to impact everyone on the face of the earth. Out of interest, I read a little bit about Buddha. How here's someone who lived about 5 centuries before the master, and he saw the need for humankind to remember who we are. But his approach was different. From the other side of the mountain, one could say. He came up with what he called the Four Noble Truths. I've modified the wording to make it a little more clear for us. But essentially, he said, number one, the world as it is now is full of suffering. Well, yeah, we could agree with that. The world is a mess as it is, with people not knowing who they are and doing whatever they please. The world is full of suffering. First of the Four Noble Truths. Number two, the cause of suffering is having personal cravings separate from inner guidance. Well, that's right. The human part from out from under control, doing whatever it thinks it needs to do, bumping into other humans separate from their inner guidance, doing what they think they need to do, causes a lot of problems. So number three is that the end of suffering comes when a person no longer has cravings or desires or wants separate from inner guidance. It's yielding to what is within, which knows. And finally, number four, there is a path which leads away from this cycle of personal cravings and a suffering world. That's why we're here. We find ourselves in an old world with an old way of doing things, and it is a mess and full of suffering. But we've come to bring a new world, a world that reveals the quality of the character of spirit, of life, of truth, and of love. And if we love that and extract our life substance from the old world, the new world begins to put in an appearance. The old world will dissolve when people stop pouring their life blood into the old world. That's what's sustaining it. And so I find that I can be aware of what's happening in the world, who won the last election, and that there's a war going on in the Middle East, and weather is getting very weird of late. But I'm not emotionally involved in it because I really don't care that much about the old world. What I care about, what's important to me, is being who I am. It is surrendering to the reality of this being that I am, of taking responsibility and for sustaining my understanding and my revelation in my living of the reality of love and the one who leads us. In closing, I am reminded of the story of the biblical Jacob, who was privy to the substance of his father and grandfather, Abraham and Isaac. And at some point in his life, he had a dream, or perhaps it was a vision in which he saw what he thought of as angels, divine beings, going up and down a ladder between heaven and earth. He realized that he was much more than the human self he thought himself to be, as was everyone else. That we are human, but there is a being part of us, a divine part of us. And he heard comforting words spoken to him, essentially by his own inner reality to his outer self. These are the same words that our inner reality speaks to the person that we may have thought ourselves to be. The inner reality says to us, "And behold, I am with thee and will keep thee whithersoever thou goest. For I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of." This presence has been with us since we were first being formed in the womb. It is who we are. It has always been there for us, guiding us, watching out for us, loving us. All we have to do is be thankful and love that which is the truth of us, so that the outer and the inner may blend and be as one. The master spoke of this in his own experience. He said, "The Father and I are one. Therefore, I am a revelation of heaven on earth, just as you can be a revelation of heaven on earth. All you have to do is let go of the old world and embrace the new world, so that you are a complete divine being, a divine man or divine woman in human form. As we do this collectively, substance is generated, the substance of understanding. And those who wish to know the truth of themselves, wherever they are, can connect with this and be uplifted and see things anew. Then it's up to them as to whether they can begin to sustain this in their living and rise even higher in consciousness so that they are more fully present. And as more and more people begin to remember who they are and why they've come to Earth, things will change. And it may be that we are closer than we think to something of a tipping point, to a point of decision for humanity, whether we will cling to the old world and the old way of doing things, or usher in the new world where heaven and earth are one. Thank you for letting me share these thoughts, which are close to my heart. If anyone else wishes to contribute to our time together, please speak freely.
Magnificent, Larry.
With you, Larry. Truly in the depth.
Larry, I found it so easy, moment by moment, to be with you in this beautiful articulation of spirit this morning. Such a beautiful peace I feel in your presence and your articulation of what is true for you. And like that golfer, I feel blessed to come into a flow of seeing things from this perspective and bringing it, really just bringing it. No adorning it with anything special or special Christmas gifts, just the real deal, right where I am. Thank you so much.
Larry, I felt like we were swinging the golf club together today, that there was a easy flow as we spent time together. And really what you shared with us was like a cornucopia of spiritual reality. Many things that we think we've known over the years, but when we actually have the experience of it, we realize that what people like Martin and Yolanda were saying are actually true, that they knew it was true because they were having the experience, and they always invited others to rise up, as you described the analogy of the mountaintop, rise up and actually know these spiritual realities that are being talked about. And so the words that stood out to me was embrace the new world. And as we actually know these spiritual realities, we know the new world. And so we are in position to invite others to know what this is. And there is an invitation to for others to embrace it as well by reason simply of our simple example and inspiration.
Behold, I come quickly with thee. Thank you, Larry. This has been wonderful to feel the true glory of knowing one's own beingness on earth. And the sooner we can release the burdens of all of our differences created through the belief systems and wantings of this and that, it's just what keeps us divided. Satan has found it to be very effective over the generations. Divide and conquer. And there are so many avenues of this division that we cannot allow to separate ourselves. All of us on this line, for instance, we have come together to know the oneness of the body of the Christ Spirit here on earth. And we shall not allow this difference of opinion, no matter where it exists, whether it's politics or religion or economics or any of this stuff. No, I am here to serve and to love, and I love each one in the same purity of heart. So thank you for bringing this so beautifully to point, Larry. Amen.
I love the golf analogy and story. Anybody who golfs knows that there are a million rules. Do this, don't do that, don't do this, go over there, don't go over there. So many rules. I listened to a gentleman who is a professional golfer high up in the, and he said, I don't know why amateurs do what we do, because we do it for money and fame, and you should just do it for enjoyment. Just go golf. Just enjoy. And I think the same thing in life. There are so many rules. Don't say this. Don't say that. Be careful what you say. And to me, you opened up a space in me of surrender, I think is what I really feel to whatever the present moment is, surrender to that without the. Without all the rules. And it is a real pleasure to be with all of you always, because this is so important to us. This is so vital to all of us. It's vital to me. And I love sharing in it with you. And Larry, you're so smart. So brought this so into focus for me, not just because of golf, but because of who we are. Thank you so much.
One thing that was very evident as we listened to Yolanda's words and Martin's words, there was a sense of agreement, a sense of oneness between a very large group of people. The act of being one body is the answer to the new world. Within the largeness of God, there is possibility of oneness. It doesn't exist anywhere else. If we aren't under the enfoldment and reality of a larger picture, we're certainly not going to be friends with each other.
And we'll always find something that doesn't quite suit how we do something. That's very much all of the old world. It doesn't exist in the new world. In the new world, there is relaxation, there is gratitude, there is hitting the ball right every single time. Oneness is happening again on this earth. As you said, Larry, we may be closer to the tipping point than we think we are. But the tipping point is coming because there is oneness. And the silliness of criticism or fighting or war or all of that nonsense will be forgotten because it's not real. This is real. Being together under the ceiling of the Great One is what we're about. Thank you so much.
Thank you, one and all, for participating. In my little golf story, I realized how cumbersome our educational system is these days. It is so much easier to enter into substance of a particular type that lets us see in a way that all the words in the world would never let us see. Once having seen that, then it's up to us to sustain it or not. And so, those of us who had the privilege of knowing someone like Martin, for me, part of it was Bill Bayen Sr. To be lifted up in their presence and to begin to see life as they saw it is such a wonderful privilege. A thousand words, a million words could never convey that. But seeing through the lens of a particular kind of fine substance lets one see a new possibility. And then it's one's responsibility to persist in staying at that point. How wonderful to see that. And yes, there have been many who have begun the trek up the mountainside to greater understanding. And found a comfortable off-ramp and said, "Well, that's enough. I'm okay here." So I thank God for those who persisted and felt the inner urge to know more, to completely meld with their inner reality. So that they are fully present on earth and know for themselves what it is to be a divine being in human form. How wonderful to share that. Now, before we have closeout music, thanks to Sanford, I'd like to, well, even before I get to that, let me say that in 2 weeks we'll gather again, I believe, with Bill and Linda Bayen for dialogue. And in 4 weeks, our friend Bill Isaacs will have something to share with us. But on a, if I may, on a personal note, 40 years ago today, on December 1st, 1984, Joyce and I were married. So today is our 40th anniversary, a particular cycle of time. I am so thankful to have this wise, caring, intelligent woman as my partner. But more than that, I'm so thankful that together we have been able to offer something of divine men and women in union being present on earth at this time. It isn't about me. It isn't even about us. It's about what we've come to do together. So thank you for letting me share that. Sanford, shall we have some music to take us out? Thank you.
I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got plenty to be thankful for. No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small. I buy them all at the 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small, buy them all, 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I've got plenty to be thankful for.
Bye. Thank you so much.